I knew that the trick to success wasn't, you know, Google AdWords or understanding attribution, like we were talking about before we hit record, mm-hmm. or understanding accounting. It's not that. It was building a team, having a clear vision, having good systems and metrics in place to measure your success. It was things like that. It was how to solve real problems, how to make real decisions, how to do, you know, really detailed analysis and make wise, prudent decisions that would be in keeping with something like Proverbs, or I was reading from in the Liturgy Hours this morning, the Office of Readings, the from the Book of Wisdom, and you know the natural law principles of prudence and wisdom in there, like screaming at me in terms of business.
Welcome to The Crunch, the only Catholic podcast for people with a pulse. My name is Ethan,
and I'm Patrick.
Today we have a very special guest, a man who is prolific in more than one regard. I'm looking at his bio here to make sure I don't screw it up. He's the CEO of multiple businesses, just like you, Patrick. And yeah. He's a father of 15, and he's written 16. Not just 16? The book is incorrect then, so that's my
number,
mistake.
When I was researching Connor, the number kept going up. I
know, you keep finding older and older. There's a live ticker. Amazing. Like the doomsday clock that just keeps going. he's a father of 16. He does a lot with many businesses that some you've heard of, some you haven't. But he's written a book called The Well-Ordered Family, which you can get. I'm going to hold it up here. You can get for 50% off using the code CRUNCH50. So you click the link in the bio of this podcast. You get 50% off on The Well-Ordered Family. Connor's going to tell us all about it today. Connor Gallagher, thank you for coming to the show.
Yeah, thanks, guys. You got a hilarious show. Whenever I'm deeply depressed and slipping into spiritual despair on my way to the gates of hell because it's the unforgivable sin, I just turn on your shorts and laugh my way back to heaven.
Yes. This is amazing.
Like when people come on and compliment us. This be known. The best way to get on the show is to send us compliments and then get on the show.
A lot of people try to neg us. They're like, oh, your podcast sucks. And then they like try to go like, oh, can I come on? It's like, well... What are you trying to? You're trying to be funny. First of all, hurtful. Second of all, why does that work for you in any other avenue of your life where you like say that something sucks and then you try to be a part of it? I don't understand.
Yeah, it's seriously funny stuff. Catholicism needs humor. You know, G.K. Chesterton talked about the mirth of Christ. You right? Mm-hmm. And you know, there's some. I'm just of the thought that those guys sitting around campfires, walking mm-hmm. around the Holy Land or whatever they're doing, that they were telling jokes and they were normal guys and they're having fun.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the gospels don't reveal that, but certainly don't prevent that. So I choose to believe that there was a lot of humor and that he wants us to keep laughing. So.
Absolutely. I mean, we feel the same. That's why we started this show, is because we were in college. This is nearly 9 years, 8 years ago.
8 years ago. Yeah.
It's 8 years ago. We were both in college, and we saw that all of the shows that existed at that time were just PhDs in theology or priests talking about this, that, and the other thing. And to your point that you said before the show.
Leisure being the basis of culture.
Leisure is the basis of culture. How many times can we talk about that freaking book? Let's get some new things, you know, out into the world. And a lot of it is just so boring now. I feel like a lot of the Catholic podcasts just have the same conversation over and over again, which is, we fall subject to that too, for sure. But because we have the comedy aspect and because we tell dating stories that our audience writes in and we do all these things, I think it makes for a much more human approach than just, we're gonna do the Divine Mercy Chaplet in a year now, and it's gonna be in a year, and that's gonna be why it's special. It's like, well... Okay.
Awesome.
I guess we can keep milking that cow, but eventually she's going to run dry.
No, it's true. And like part of the reason that things do seem to get stale is because, you know, we Catholics, we have a beautiful repertoire, but we do kind of play the same songs over and over again. And the way to not do that is to actually have some political commentary, cultural commentary, mm-hmm. and that keeps it fresh, you know, without losing the tradition. You know, guys, there's an incredible analogy from the Aeneid, and you probably haven't heard this one, but there's a scene where Aeneas is fleeing Troy. Okay. So Troy has been, you know, the Trojan horse came in, Odysseus kicked everyone's butt, Achilles kicking everybody's butt, and Aeneas is fleeing Troy. And it's a beautiful little scene where he picks his father up on his back and he's carrying his father and he's leading his little son by the hand. And they're fleeing Troy together, all three of them. They're going to get on the boat and they're going to go found what is modern day Italy, right? The moral of that little blip in the book is that a true leader carries the tradition on their back while leading the future generation by the hand. And, you know, I think sometimes I'm a traditional Catholic. I mean, I run tan, right? So, I mean,
controversial.
But we can't get stuck in the past. We must lead the future generation by the hand. That's the purpose of the tradition of yesterday, to make tomorrow to better. And so I love that imagery. And that's why, you know, I love, you know, supporting, you know, activities like you guys have, because you got true faith, you know, in the background behind you, but you're also kind of going out into the world and doing real things. So anyway, I just love that analogy.
And it's objectively harder, right? It's like difficult because it's harder to run away with someone on your back, right? But like,
it is.
It's hard to move forward, but that's almost like by design. You can't go too far, right? He founded Italy, not, you know, Britain. He didn't go completely off base. But you know, I think perhaps the right now it's like leading the future generations, like, okay, we're going to run, but only with the kid, and we're going to leave the father behind. Mm-hmm.
There's no way I could pick my dad up on my back. So he must have been a badass because...
Yeah, right.
my dad's a big guy. But I was giving my teenage son... I was at an F3 workout. Do you guys know what F3 is?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
No. Yes, I was at an F3
You don't know
workout.
About F3, you... Patrick? This is right. Dude. Oh, dude. Patrick's F3 arc is incoming as soon as he hears about this.
As soon as I hear about this.
Yeah. Connor, you want to tell him?
But yeah, well, Faith Fitness Fellowship.
Okay.
And it's an early morning boot camp style workout for men. And I used to do that all the time. But one day I started taking my teenage son with me. And for some stupid reason, we started doing these fireman carries. And I picked up like my 14-year-old son or whatever he was at the time. And I was carrying him on my shoulder. And I swear, I thought I got shot in the leg. Like somebody shot me in the calf. And I was like, it was just like a drive-by shooting. And so I dropped him. And I start looking around. I don't see any cars or anything. I was like, what the hell is that? And I was like, is some punk kid with a BB gun or somebody threw a rock at me or something? And then all of a sudden, I felt my calf just like begin to explode. And I just tore my calf. I tore my calf in the middle of this fireman's carry. But I thought I got shot, you know? I mean, it would hurt so bad. And it just like popped. I felt like a pop, you know?
Oh.
So that didn't.
I no longer want to do F3s
or Aeneas because he was a badass and I am not. But I can still carry tradition on my metaphorically. I can carry tradition on my shoulder even if I can't carry my 14-year-old son.
So. I love that you looked around for a car instead of like down at your calf for blood. You were like, instead of like the thing that would. You were
like,
ready
I'm
to fight.
Get revenge.
Yeah.
I love it.
All I need is one leg and I'm going to catch the car and invoke justice.
Yes. This funny thing about the Aeneid is that I don't know if you know about the Well-Read Moms program, Connor, but
heard
this,
of it. Yeah.
So my wife and a lot of her mom friends here are going through it. And the Aeneid is the book for this month, which is very funny to me. Because I'm listening to my wife and all of her mom friends talk, and they're all like pretending to enjoy the Aeneid with each other, but you can just tell that none of them like it. It's really funny.
You know, honestly, it's one of my favorite books. I did it twice at Steubenville, and I've helped my kids on it. You know, throughout the year, I've read multiple translations of it. Like I'm a big, you know,
Aeneid guy.
I am, and the Odyssey. I mean, I'm a nerd. I am sorry. There's a nerd factor to me.
That's okay.
Sure.
It's so. Well, you and Patrick are on the nerd train.
Well, I'm a publisher, so I'm kind of
you
kind of
have to
part of the deal. So
yeah, no, I got a lot of books in here too. Don't worry, we're all on that tip. Tell me, I want to know about your businesses. Patrick and I are both very entrepreneurial minded. That's been one of the developments of this show over the last probably 2 or 3 years since I left Focus and since Patrick left youth ministry. We both have done different things and got more into business with this podcast and then just with the things that we do outside of it. I'd love to hear your journey to become, to me, in my mind, it's like you're a CEO of multiple businesses. Why don't you just pick one? But maybe your story will indicate why you are CEO of multiple businesses and how you got started and what all you did that led you to to where you are now. I think a lot of our listeners are interested in growing their business, providing, I mean, how do you provide for a family of 16, right? Like a lot of that, a lot of people have fears around having kids because they don't think they can even support one. And here you are, you know, very successful in multiple different lanes, providing for a family. I would love to kind of hear that story and
you got an air conditioned shed. You're living the dream.
I know exactly. Right. This is high dollar stuff.
Well, the way you afford 16 children is like you have to have a really good chart on the wall, like which days each kid gets to eat. You know, it's rationing. It's just rationing.
It's a Gantt chart that we put up on the wall.
Business efficiency for feeding your children. I mean, that's indeed what you have to do.
That's amazing.
So my wife and I get married young. I go off to, we graduated from Steubenville together. I get my master's in philosophy, which qualifies you to do approximately nothing.
Mm-hmm. And then, sit alone in a park and think.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was really good at that. I was really good at that. If you get paid for that, best. I didn't like rolling in it.
If you were in Tomo's America, that you'd be getting $60K a year and fentanyl to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, actually, in one of your shorts, I saw a clip from Breaking Bad.
Which one? What did you do with Breaking Bad, Patrick?
Who's we? It's the Orthodox. I was like the Orthodox. When the Catholics are like, we have a lot in common. The Orthodox are like, we? Who's we? Yeah. There is no we.
That's funny.
Yeah. And I have to admit, I'm watching the show now for the first time. I'm on season 4.
It's good.
It's compelling. Oh my gosh. Compelling TV.
And my wife will have nothing to do with it because she has class and I don't. Yeah. So
just, I like love people getting shot.
I love it. And I'm like rooting for the guy. Like, the better criminal he is, the more I like him. It's, I don't know if it's like my dark side coming out.
Well, there's
like
a certain level of virtue, right? He's getting better. He's in the empire business. You know, he doesn't care about drugs. He just wants to be the king. So it's like, well, there's a certain virtue in that, Walt. I can see, you know, you're taking charge of your own life. There's a lot to it. You're killing a lot of people, but that's in the background.
So watch how I'll tie in Breaking Bad.
Please. Into your journey.
Your question. Okay. Love this little jujitsu move here. Amazing. So I go to law school, graduate law school, master's in philosophy. First real job out, I become a federal law clerk. And it was amazing. I worked for a great judge, good Catholic man, by the way. He was a real mentor. An amazing 2 years. And I was doing like everybody else there. I was like preparing to be a lawyer. And the problem is you can see the lawyers, you know, in big law firms just like jumping from the windows because it's a terrible, terrible job. Now, being a federal law clerk is great because you actually deal with really cool crime, white collar crime, drug deals and everything like that. And I realized that if I wanted to make a lot of money, then I could probably just become a criminal because they're really stupid. I mean, you know, these criminals that we would be sentencing to, you know, life in prison, it's like, hey, let's get a ghetto car and have it like bounce up and down like that. And let's do a drug deal behind Waffle House at 2 a.m. because the cops will never look there. Right. So it's like, guys, I'm sitting here in federal court for 2 years. I'm like, if I was a criminal, I don't think I'd get caught. I mean, the cops are busy catching the stupid ones, you know? Mm-hmm. And they're so stupid. They're so stupid. So,
yeah, you don't have to be fast. You just have to be, you just can't be the slowest Boy Scout running from the bear. You just got
the bear.
You know.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, I decided not to go into law. I had job offers to go into a law firm, but then my dad calls me, and a little before that, he had been a successful business guy in a long term family business. My great grandfather founded a business, and it had been in the family for a long time. But my dad really wanted to get into Catholic publishing. So we started a company. I mean, I was on the periphery, but like I sort of helped a little bit in starting something called St. Benedict Press. And it hadn't done anything. We had $22,000 in sales after a year or two. Hadn't done anything, but we were publishing a number of Catholic books. So my dad calls me and he says, hey, I'm thinking about trying to buy Tan Books out of bankruptcy. And it is like really bankrupt for the second time. Do you want to come instead of going to a big law firm and maybe following your peers out the window, working for me as my lawyer to help me acquire this business? And if we get it, which is not for certain at all, then maybe you could run it. And so that's what I did. And so I worked for about a year to acquire it out of bankruptcy. So it was really my path in law that enabled me to get into business. And, you know, God's providence, like being a law clerk to a federal judge, I really learned to read and write. I really learned to research. And I didn't really learn that in school, but I really learned it on the job there. So it prepared me pretty well to self-educate on how to run a business because I had never had a business class or anything like that. So when we get TAN, I'm running TAN. I'm flying back and forth to Rockford, Illinois. I lived in near Charlotte. I worked remote for like 6 months up there away from my family. It was really hard going back and forth every week. And eventually we relocated it down to the Charlotte area. Anyway, make a long story short, I ran TAN. We saved it. We took a very, very bankrupt company that was just totally broken in every way, except it had a good brand. And so I really spent a lot of time rebuilding that. And I learned how to run a business. And this ties into Welder Family because I was a good self-educator. So I read every business book I could get my hands on. In fact, I went back years later and I counted and it was like 250 plus business books and I stopped counting from there.
Yeah.
So I was, and being a philosopher, which you guys can appreciate, I believed that there was a natural law within business, right? I believed that there were key principles instilled in nature by God that said, this is really how you run any organization. Because I never saw at its fundamental level business as different from any other human endeavor. It's just you got a team of people trying to accomplish a certain goal. And I knew that the trick to success wasn't, you know, Google AdWords or understanding attribution like we were talking about before we hit record or understanding accounting. It's not that. It was building a team, having a clear vision, having good systems and metrics in place to measure your success. It was things like that. It was how to solve real problems, how to make real decisions, how to do, you know, really detailed analysis and make wise, prudent decisions that would be in keeping with something like Proverbs. Or I was reading from in the Liturgy Hours this morning, the Office of Readings, from the Book of Wisdom. And, you know, the natural law principles of prudence and wisdom in there, like screaming at me in terms of business. So I kind of developed my own philosophy of business. Okay. And so we save TAN takes off, very successful, boom. And then my dad years later decides to retire. And he really wasn't very involved in TAN. That became my thing. And we own it together. Over time when he decided to retire, he had these other businesses. And he's like, son, I need you to be the CEO of this. I'm like, nah, I don't think so. I'm happy with TAN. But, you know, the fourth commandment, honor thy father. I do care about those businesses. And I wanted them to succeed. So I took over as CEO of these other businesses. And we have had a number of startups that we've tried. Some succeeded, some failed. And we have some other legacy businesses that are sales-oriented businesses. One of our companies called Milestones.com. We sell high-end corporate gifts to employers. So you work for a big company and you have a baby or you retire or you have a big promotion at work. What gift is that employer going to give you? And we try to make it very high-end, very meaningful things that aren't just cheap Yetis, but you know something better than that. Mm-hmm. So pizza that's party. One of our sales organizations. So that's an example. We've also started something called Good and True Media. My brothers and I started that together. And now it's becoming, you know, any innovation, by the way, if you want a good entrepreneur book, it's called Plan B. And it's about Plan A, your business plan doesn't always work out. Mm-hmm. And so the vast majority of successful businesses are the Plan B, right? It's the second iteration. So that's a good business book. But our Plan B for Good and True Media is really a self-publishing firm. And so like you might've heard of Moms for Liberty, for example, right? So like we have produced their book for them. They're the publisher, but we're like the back end, you know, self-publisher that designs the book, helps them get it printed, helps them get the metadata distributed. So that's another venture that we've, that we've kind of gone into. So that sort of answers your question of the different businesses. I've sat on a lot of boards. I'm on the board of Belmont Abbey College, St. Joseph Seminary, other things.
Wow.
But I've all of that. The only reason I like to kind of go through that, guys, is I'm not trying to show off my resume or something, because there's a billion people far more impressive. But my point is that there's a natural law of business. And so I became convinced as my family was getting bigger and bigger and having more and more kids that, God, it's out of control at my house. We need to start bringing business savviness into this family to keep things under control. And as I started doing that slowly with my wife and bringing home certain business tools to the house, I realized this works. Like, this is a real thing. The activity at home is not that different than the activity at work. And the best part about it, guys, was the fact that at work, I was sort of the man. I felt good at work. I was smart at work. I was competent. People saw me in my best light. I was on my A game. And then I would go home and I'm totally on my B game. My wife never saw me in my zone. I was always just like the oldest of the children waiting to be told what to do. And so, you know, it's hard for a guy who works and who comes home to a wife who's been handling the house all day long. You can't just come home and start telling people it doesn't work like that. It's her domain. I have to respect that. But my role as husband and father is supposed to be special. So how do I bridge that gap? And so bringing some of these tools home that I've created at Well-Ordered Family is a way for me to go from the executive at work to sort of the executive at home while respecting my wife's domain and authority in all her area. But I'm able to bring home a competency that I've developed at work. And that's how all my business experience led to Well-Ordered Family.
I want to bookmark and circle back, because I can hear the alarm bells going off in people's heads when you talk about applying business principles to family. When I was a youth minister, I was reading a lot of business books for no reason, really. But like, I was reading like Jim Collins and, you know, like, why am I reading a business book? I'm a youth minister. But I was really interested in systems and like organizational health. Pat Lencioni, like those guys.
Yeah,
we would talk about them on the podcast. And the prevailing sentiment, I think Ethan's prevailing sentiment back then, and even the sentiment among most of my friends, was like, business and ministry can't mix. And so a lot of our time was spent like kind of, I think the way you said of natural law, it seems to me like the principles that underlie these books is a misconception about them. The idea of business books is that it is utilitarian tactics as opposed to human strategies. Because like when you hear executive of a company and then executive of a family, the image that comes in people's mind is like domineering CEO. But anyone who's read like one business book that's been published in the last 5 years knows that domineering CEO doesn't do it anymore.
Doesn't work.
Maybe it did once upon a time.
Yeah, actually, you just be sued out of your brains, and so you're going to go out of business anyway. It doesn't work. Even if it did work, you can't get away with it because you'll be sued. So, you know, and even if you tried to do that at home, you're going to end up divorced, so don't try it. Even if it worked, it's not worth it.
Yeah.
So it seems like the business world is kind of coming around, and you can see this with guys like Pat Lencioni, who's a devout Catholic guy, who's, you know, talking about maybe the softer side of business, what some might call the softer side of business. I can see how those things would apply to families. I just wonder, like, what would you say are your major influences, authors that people might know, business management folks that people might know in building Well-Ordered Family? Who are like your influences?
Okay, so my influences would definitely be Jim Collins. I think I've read all of his books. And then a guy named Michael Gerber, who wrote a book called, that was maybe his book called The E-Myth, I think the first business book I ever read.
That's the book that's holding up my camera right now.
Are you serious?
My camera jiggles. And
there you go. So
I was going to pick it up and show you, but my camera will go out.
It would have led to a cascade of events that would have ruined this show if he moves.
Well, I mean, look, let me relate just to kind of dispel the myth. Well, I mean, I can list real quick. I'll just kind of rattle
some more.
Let me come back to E-Myth, right?
Yeah.
Because it answers the kind of the objection that like you were referring to. But the E-Myth, and then Patrick Lencioni, I've read a number of his books. I really fell in love with Peter Drucker. Like, he's the original. He's the original business mind back from the 30s, 40s, 50s. And I read a lot of his books. Jim Collins was sort of like the new Peter Drucker in a certain way. But then I came across two companies that had a massive influence on me. One is called Scaling Up, and Vern Harnish. That's like a business system, and how you follow a certain business system, a holistic system, and implementing a certain meeting cadence, a certain type of accountability chart, et cetera, et cetera. A company called EOS came out of Scaling Up. Okay. And I read EOS's stuff. There it tracks.
Got it right
here. There you go. So, I say it came out of, I don't want to like misspeak,
sure,
but it's, yeah. I, my understanding of the history there was Gino Wickman was involved with Scaling Up or influenced by Scaling Up or something to that effect. And then went and kind of made a more simple version. If I am misstating that, Gino, forgive me.
I don't think Gino's listening to this.
No,
I'm just going to put you at ease.
Show, and that's, I know, true. You are.
Hey, thank you for listening to this episode of The Crunch. Sorry to interrupt what I'm sure is a stimulating intellectual conversation, but I wanted to pause the episode real quick to let you hear from some of our sponsors. We will be back right after this.
Ethan, I'm running into a bit of a problem.
Again?
I accidentally introduced my son Leo to television and movies.
Uh-huh.
And it's so sick because he wants to see Jungle Book so bad. He asked me, like, Jungle Book? And he's so cute, and I want to show him Jungle Book, but I also don't want him to be addicted to television for his entire life. Have you experienced this yourself?
Yes, my son really loves Peter Pan, and so every day it's see Captain Hook, want to fight Captain Hook. So we are deep in the minds.
Same
of,
boat.
In the grip of 1930s Disney films.
They really got that stranglehold on.
They do.
I was thinking, you know, I was talking to Phoebe, is like, what are some ways that we can, you know, kind of, because it, one way to go is like, I'm going to cancel out digital stuff entirely, but you know, it's unrealistic. I want to like set up rules and stuff for my family, like some kind of structure that we can use and stick to.
Sort of like a code to live by.
Are you familiar with any place that I could get such a thing? Or
a Benedictine monastery.
Yeah, right. A rule of life or something. Do you happen to know anyone who's had 16 children and could help me out?
I do. There's a guy named Connor who actually wrote a book about this very thing, if you can believe it. It's called The Well-Ordered Family. And contained therein is the Well-Ordered Family Management System. So it takes out all of the guesswork, all of the confusion, all of the, how do I know how much time and energy put into this? How do I make sure that we got this taken care of? How do I invest for my children's future? In more ways than one, it's all there in the Well-Ordered Family, which I really appreciate.
Nice. And I believe they sent us a discount code for our our viewers. They can get 50% off the book.
Is that true?
Is really, that's a really solid discount, actually. So
hold on.
Go to wellorderedfamily.com.
I'm going there right now. Yeah.
If you go to wellorderedfamily.com, you put that book in your cart, and you use the code CRUNCH50, you'll get 50% off the book, which is great. You can go through the system, check it out, and then see what Connor has to offer.
Yeah, go to wellorderedfamily.com, and up at the top you click get the book, and that'll take you to the book purchase page. Oh, and then coupon code CRUNCH. I'm applying 50. It right now. CRUNCH50. Thank you. CRUNCH50. And oh, look at that. I just got 50% off. So my book just went from $24.95 USD to $12.47. So
huge. Wellorderedfamily.com. Take advantage of it now. Thanks so much to Wellordered Family for sponsoring this episode of The Crunch.
So, but I know a ton of EOS implementers, and I have a ton of respect for them. So, you know, I don't pretend to know all the details of how EOS came about there, but what I've been told is that, and Scaling Up is like a more complex version of EOS, or you should say EOS is a simplified version of Scaling Up with differences, but both those books had a tremendous influence on me. And I
so then you scaled up your family and you had 16 kids.
Right.
As you instantly implemented, you're like, oh, scale up. Great.
There
let's
you
start
go.
Doing that.
All right. Come on, Ashley, let's do this. You know, let's scale up this thing. So, but you know, so those books were an incredible distillation of all these different business books I had read. And like, I remember one day looking at Traction and like going through the books that Gino references. I'm like, I've read all these books. This is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. So it was masterful at simplifying and scaling up. My business used to run on EOS, and I still have two businesses where we really implement the EOS side of things. TAN, which has grown in complexity and in size and in number and in little subsidiary brands, we're actually making a shift to scaling up now because it's a structure that can enable more complex growth. So we're big into scaling up right now, right in the thick of it. But EOS worked very well for us when we were a very, very simple, straightforward business. So all of these books have, that's my long-winded answer of like, those are the kind of books that influenced. And so when people see the Well-Ordered Family thing, they're like, oh, Traction. I'm like, well, it's a circle. Yeah. And you can, there's some common words, but what overarching business book doesn't talk about vision,
right?
Doesn't talk about people in some way and systems and metrics. So, you know, there's similarities, but there's clear differences as well. So, but going back to Michael Gerber, okay, because the E-Myth was a pivotal moment in my professional development. I realized that the E-Myth, the entrepreneurial myth, that's what E stands for. The myth is that the entrepreneur has to kind of do everything him or herself, right? That's the myth. You start a bakery, you have to make the cakes, you have to deal with the customers, you have to count the money. Okay, so I learned that the trick to long-term success in a business was very prudent delegation. Build a team and delegate. And then to systematize the business to where, and the E-Myth talks about like the McDonald's model, the franchise prototype, I think it calls a franchise prototype, where the 5,000th McDonald's acts like the first McDonald's. It's amazing. The genius is not the food. The genius is the systems to where anybody, even all those criminals that I used to help sentence to prison, they're able to work at McDonald's because the systems are so bulletproof. Any idiot can do it, right? So isn't it funny that Kamala claims to have worked at McDonald's, but there's like no record of it? And then Donald Trump actually worked at McDonald's for a day. I just think it's hilarious.
It was hilarious. Yeah. It was so funny.
So, but the systems, guys, the systems. So, now apply that mindset. I was really good at building systems at work. And then I come home and my wife is randomly telling people what to do. Do the dishes, clean the floors, vacuum, do the laundry. And I'm sitting there saying, if this was a McDonald's, it'd be a freaking disaster. Like, I can't run my business this way and tell, hey, you go pay the bills. I can't do that. You know, so I was like, honey, we need to bring some systemization into this house. And most families have like a chore chart. When your kids get older, you have to have a chore chart. That's like the first step. But then over time, I realized we need to systematize this. And I started asking myself, what other business concepts, what other business principles can apply to family? And I found some very, very important things where a business is going out into the world, into the market, and they're analyzing the society elements, the technological elements, the environmental, the legal, the technology, all these things. So I said, there's a lot of tools out there where I can bring it, put it in a book and start applying it to my family. And so I've done that, and we could talk about, you know, each part of the system or whatever you want to do, but the E-Myth of systematizing an entire business, I think that's really important. And it's this, when I talk about systemization, a lot of people think I'm just talking about get the dishes done. That's like the tip of the iceberg. Mm-hmm. The systemization is this whole ecosystem that my family's involved with. You guys are familiar with Rod Dreher's Benedict Option, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, go out and structure, like build this whole community, you know, around your family. And I'm saying, yeah, now you don't have to move out to Wyoming off the grid to do it. Okay. But how do you build, where's that?
Or Belgium. Sorry, Rod lives in Belgium, right?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So like, how do you go and build what I call an ecosystem, which is a multiple environments around your family to get order and structure and back into your family life? Parents are idiots. We are allowing the world to completely disrupt our sanity, our harmony, our way of life. And we're playing the victim. Oh, well, Little League has practice like every night, and we have to do ballet and we have to do music and we have to do these activities. And my kid has to have a cell phone at like eight so that because her friends have one, and it's so on and so on and so on. And we become these victims of society coming in at our family. Well, that's like a business guy to me saying inflation, you know, I mean, regulations. No, you know, the thing that makes a successful business person is that they prevail in spite of all that stuff. But you go to work, you man up, and you say, no one's going to fix this for me. I have to do this myself. I have to take control of my business or my department or my product or my customer, whatever it is. You don't have to be the CEO, but you know, it's down to you and it's merit-based and you have to work at it. And we go home and we become victims of our situation, of our society, of technology, of the internet, of Little League and algebra teachers. And we just want to blame everybody for taking our children away from us, as opposed to taking ownership ourselves and say, no, I didn't lose my teenager to the world. I surrendered my teenager to the world. And so you have to start thinking about it like a business, take ownership, extreme ownership of it, like a business owner does. Another reference to a great book. And if you have that mindset, you'll stop being the victim. And too many parents have become the victim.
That's amazing. The one thing that we get a lot of is questions from single people about dating. And so this is a refrain that we get often is, well, there's no single people in my area. There's no good young Catholics near me.
Not according to those pop-up ads I keep getting.
Not, it's true. I keep getting these beautiful women showing up on my timeline saying they want me to leave my family for them and live in Romania. So, we're getting all these people that write in and they're saying, well, it's just not possible for me because I live in this town. It's just not possible for me because I'm 29 and I'm single. It's just not possible for me. And one thing that we used to be very gentle and sweet with these people, but I feel like we've grown more and more,
like you'll find them eventually. And like,
unforgiving.
No,
where it's just like, this is actually, you can just do things. Like you can pick up your life and you can move to another city. And you can go and meet as many people as you want to. There are things that you have control over where you can set up your life where you are more likely, you can increase your luck surface area to set yourself up so that you are more likely to encounter someone that you will marry, right? And then the same thing goes with what you're talking about with family. You can set up your life where it's you can't prevent your teenager. They have free will, right? They can do anything. But you can make it pretty darn impossible for them to, you know, leave you or abandon you or to abandon the faith, right? You can do that, but that's not the solution people want to hear, right? They want to hear, oh, well, if we just have this policy and we vote for this person, and if we switch out the Pope with a different guy, then it'll all be fixed. And it's like I actually don't have to do any work. It's the women who are wrong, or it's the children who are wrong. And that's not a sustainable way to live.
I think the reason why everyone was, you know, everyone, including myself, were apprehensive of these business books applied to ministry is because these business books give you a lot of agency, or they tell you like you have a lot of agency, you have control. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of us are afraid of agency. One reason that I can think of, and you can add others, but it's like we're afraid of agency because it means that we have to do something. We're afraid of agency because it means we could fail. Mm-hmm. But why, Connor, in your opinion, like, why do you think what I see is Catholics are afraid of agency. They're afraid of making their own decisions and controlling their lives. Why do you think that is?
Well, first of all, Ethan, I agree with everything you just said. Everything, dude, you're spot on. I'm just finishing a manuscript. If I shared my screen, I could show you the rough draft manuscript. It's right here.
Leak it right now on the podcast.
I don't know if I can even share a screen. I don't know.
That's okay.
But it's called The Architect. Okay. It's a short little book and it's called The Architect. I'm going to answer your question, Patrick, as best I can, but I loved it.
No, that's okay. Take
it. The Architect is like, you have to build your system. And like for that young Catholic says, oh, there's no one around. If you were like, if you had to fish in order to feed yourself, would you sit in an empty pond forever, you know, saying, well, there's no fish here. No, you got to go to a different pond. So that's the same thing. It's a victimization. And we have lost that agency. We've lost that ability to pick up and move ourselves. First of all, if you're single, the amount of freedom you have is unbelievable. Okay. So don't waste that. Mm-hmm. And secondly, stop complaining. Like if guys, mm-hmm. To the young men out there, let me tell you something. You come to Charlotte, North Carolina, and you go to my beautiful traditional Catholic parish, Novus Ordo and Latin Mass community, kind of beautifully combined there. And I'm telling you what, there are dozens of beautiful, single, competent women who are desperate to get hitched. Okay.
And it's an American Airlines hub, so you can fly direct from anywhere in the country.
There you go.
To Charlotte today.
Live in Connor's air conditioned shed behind his house to meet a wife.
Sure. We'll start
What's a 17th person, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So, and you know, a lot of those young Catholic women work for TAN, by the way. So it's not a bad dating location.
There you go.
Any which way, I'm getting old too. I'm looking at these people, I'm like, yeah, you're young enough to be my daughter. That's really weird. That's, you know, hey, this guy's young enough to be my son. That's really strange. I mean, because sure, like guys in your, I'm 45, but like, I'm sort of in my brain, I'm 25. You know what I mean? But I'm,
yeah, I feel the same.
So
way.
Nonetheless, let me kind of turn to like what Patrick was asking about.
Sure.
I don't think that Catholics are any worse at it than anybody else, Patrick. I just think that, I just think that Catholics are no damn better than anyone else. I think that's the problem. You know, and in fact, I am often very impressed. Like you've probably heard it, but like, how is it that the Protestants play with half a deck and play better cards than we do? You know what I mean? They do a lot right. They have fellowship. They have a lot of natural organizational support. I just spoke at a big conference called the Dad Edge Summit, which is a huge podcast for dads in the evangelical world. And I was amazed at it's like an F3 conference. Imagine that, right? It's like an F3 conference. So they're really good at that. Are Catholics more lazy than others? I mean, I can give possibly, Patrick, right? Possibly, because we've been spoon-fed. We have the whole tradition. And of course, when you're spoiled on the sacrament, on catechesis, on community, you could take it for granted. I mean, that's clear. In fact, you know, I'm a Southern Catholic, right? So growing up in Charlotte in the 80s, you were the weird Catholic kid in the neighborhood, and it was an issue. You know, it was an issue. And now so many Northerners have transplanted. It's not an issue anymore. Mm-hmm. But my dad, who grew up in North Carolina, less than 0.5% was Catholic. So being a Southern Catholic meant you had to be Catholic on purpose. Really, there was no cultural Catholicism. You had to mean it, right? And you had to defend it, right? And you had to be proud of it. So, but I do think that, you know, ultimately the problem in our modern world, I'm going to go a little bit deeper theological on you here. So please. One of my spiels that I talk a lot about, I talked about it to the Dad Edge, particularly to men, is that the sin of the age, this applies perfectly to the architect idea. This applies to really answer your question, Patrick. It's this: the sin of the age. Every age has a different kind of emphasis on sin, you know, and pride's the root of all sin. I get that. But it's not lust. We think it is because everyone's perverted. It's not lust. The sin of the age for men, I think there's a difference here between men and women, is sloth. It's sloth. And so, lust and gluttony is kind of the byproduct, but we are a spiritually lazy, sloppy, spiritually couch potato kind of community, culture right now. Now, here's the thing. You think of sloth and you think of some fat dude eating Cheetos on the couch watching Netflix or binge watching Breaking Bad. At midnight.
Who would do that?
Who would do that?
Among us.
While his wife is asleep in the next room with the baby. but you know, hey, I eat keto ice cream. I'm not eating Cheetos. Okay. If I eat Cheetos, that would be me. Okay.
Yeah.
But so here's the thing. It's Aquinas says that sloth is sorrow towards spiritual goods, right? So So it's actually our very busy, frantic lifestyle. Hamsters on the wheel, consumerism galore, swiping your debit card 50 times a day, getting in the car, driving everywhere, taking the kids to 15 different activities, getting so busy that your wife has to take meds just to get through the day because of anxiety and depression, no matter how much money's in a bank account. In fact, the more money's in the bank account, statistically, the more likely they are to be on meds. Two working households, no matter how many kids you have, just because we're keeping up with the Joneses. It goes on and on. And in that super busyness, that obsession with productivity is in the belly of that Trojan horse, going back to the Aeneid reference before, the Trojan horse slides into our gates. The Trojan horse is the busyness of life. It's over productivity. There's an app for everything. Time management. We're going to figure out how to get 10 metrics of crap done in 5 minutes. We're going to get so much done. We're going to learn how to be so efficient and productive. But in the belly of that Trojan horse is sloth. And the devil comes out of it and says, okay, you're so busy. You need to relax. You don't have time for prayer. You don't have time for devotion. You don't have time for church on Sunday because your kid has travel soccer. You don't have time for these things. You are spiritually, psychologically exhausted because you have worshiped countless idols around you. You have no energy left for the true God. That is sloth, and that's what men have fallen into, whether they have a six-pack or they're fat as hell. That's the sin of men in today's world, is sloth. I don't know what the question was at this point, but
no,
that's my answer.
This is wonderful.
Ethan's a six pack. I'm the fattest there.
I was saying that you had the six pack because you're the one actually working out. And ever since I had my child,
Ethan and I switch back off.
We switch back and forth of which of us is healthy. Yeah. And which of us isn't. So my follow-up question to this is, I love it. 100% absolute agreement with you. This is maybe selfish of me to ask this question, but you, CEO, multiple companies, very successful. You just told us before the show how much TanBook spends on ads in a year. That blew my mind. Not really, but it's just a lot of money, right? So it's like there's a lot tied up in what you do. Patrick and I both desire to be successful. We both desire to make good money so that our wives don't have to work, so that we can have as many kids as we need to and live in nice homes in nice neighborhoods, right? It's a desire that we both share. We're working on it together. That feels like it comes along with a lot of mental strain and a lot of time spent reading books, to your point, thinking about work, strategizing about work. What's my next offering going to be? Who am I going to connect with next? I need to reach out to this person. And then once you know that, and that's maybe just your side business. And then when you're in your day job, it's thinking about all the things. How do I improve? How do I get a promotion? How do I get a raise? How do we make more money as a business? I need more clients. I need to get better at client servicing. There's aspects of this that I don't understand. And it just kind of takes up the mind all the time, it feels like, for me, where like I'm getting up early to try and get ahead, and then I'm done at 5 and I work at home. And so I just leave my little closet here and I go downstairs and my mind is still somewhat spinning. And my 2-year-old is trying to talk to me about how he drew with chalk on the patio. And my wife is trying to tell me about the raw milk that she just bought. And I'm like, I'm not all the way there. And then everyone goes to bed like 2 hours later. And then I'm up and I'm still just like spinning around, right? Yeah. And I feel like that is tied up with sloth in some way, but I can't see, maybe this is in your book and I'm sure you'll have a great answer to this, but the path forward for someone who is ambitious, who desires to be successful, who desires to provide for his family without, but I don't desire, and we don't desire the soccer and the activities. It's not that. It's like this, all this other stuff of like wanting to grow and be successful. How do we combat sloth in that realm as like young men in their 20s and 30s trying to build up their family?
Ethan, help, I'm drowning. I need to find land, perhaps an island, a Greek island, to find safety, both in physical and digital security.
You got your little flippers on?
I got my little blue
snorkel. Swimming boy? You little snorkel?
Swimming? I'm like, help someone find me. I'm swimming in an ocean of privacy violations, and I need to find a haven in this digital ocean.
You're the type of guy that would go on an excursion in the Mediterranean and the boat would leave you behind. I just need you to know that. I hear you. I think the internet is getting more and more pernicious. They're making robots that talk and walk and pour drinks.
Pour beer.
And it's getting to be a little bit much. I mean, we're going to Mars, but at what cost? You know what I mean? And I think that each American, especially in the coming years when it's going to become illegal to be Catholic, we deserve our privacy. We deserve to be protected from government overreach and big companies that are spying on us, trying to target us with ads, trying to get us to spend our hard-earned dollars on their junk instead of on investing in a beautiful future for our families and our friends. Patmos Hosting Solutions can solve that. Not only do they protect you from big tech, not only do they provide a one-of-a-kind integrated hosting solution for your business, for your website, for your platform, whatever it is you need, but they will never censor you. They'll never take your data, even if they 100% disagree with you. Even if they think you're the worst person on the planet, they have that integrity, and that's what I really love about Patmos.
Yeah, Patmos has really helped us out over the past couple of months, setting us up on our website. We are believers. We practice what we preach. And so our podcast is secure on Patmos servers, free from any kind of external intrusion that might occur. And they got a great team. They'll walk you through setting it up. It's one-on-one service, which you're not going to get on any competitor web hosting services. You go to your whatever, your Wix space or your Wordly, whatever. They're not going to host your web. They're not going to walk you through hosting. You're going to have to set up some kind of nonsense. They're going to walk you through it. They're going to help you out. They're great over there.
If you tell them that we sent you, you get 10% off. Go to patmos.tech. Let them know that we sent you. Thank you to Patmos for sponsoring this episode of The Cringe.
Yeah, I love it. I first of all, this is the pot calling the kettle black, right? I mean, the stuff I talk about and write about, I always say, you know, me writing about the spiritual life or, you know, family stuff, anything, it's like a fat guy writing a nutrition book. I mean, this is just because I talk about it, guys, doesn't mean I'm good at it. It means that I know I need to be good at it. Okay, so...
We get
the answer
for sure.
that I would give is this. If you're still searched this, I'll say this and you're like, huh? And then we talk about it and it kind of makes sense after you process it.
I'm ready.
If you're still searching, you're not committed. And what I mean by that, I heard somebody say that one time and it sunk into me. Now it's hyperbole for sure, because we're always searching for God. We can still be committed to God, but you know, imagine that person who's in this lifelong pursuit of self-improvement and they're kind of lost in searching, right? So there's a lot of areas of my life, guys, where I'm still trying to figure out like, what's the clarity? What's the vision? What is my vision for myself in 5 years in this area or that area? You know, and I'm going through that constantly. I could pull out my notebook and show you some pretty big questions that I've been asking myself about my future. How much of a, like, I'm trying to get a podcast going. Like, do I want to commit myself to that? Do I want to keep writing books? Do I keep wanting to get on a plane and fly across the country and do presentations for a group of 100 people again? Like, I do it all the time. Do I want to keep doing? I have a lot of questions I'm trying to figure out myself. Do I want to be a front stage guy and do this for the rest of my life? Or do I want to be a backstage guy and go on hikes with my kids and not do any of this anymore? Like, I'm searching. Okay. Well, in that area, I haven't committed. I don't have a plan on paper and I'm committed. Now, I'm committed to my spouse. I'm committed to my faith. There's certain areas where I'm committed. In the business world too, it's like certain things we're committed to. And it's like, we have the stress of the relief of stress of like, we don't have to go and try to figure this out anymore. We're committed to the decision. Now you have to keep tweaking and changing things. I do that a lot with business guys where it's like, I'm committed. Like, I know what Tan's goal is for 5 years from now and 10 years from now. We have our BHAG on the board. We got our big term goals and commitments and everybody on the team's perfectly aligned. Now you have to always be making little decisions along the way, but we are committed. We're no longer searching for our vision. Okay. Now something could change and maybe you have another COVID outbreak or some crazy thing that destroys the economy and you have to change vision. That happens. So my point is this. The anecdote to what you're saying is like where we feel kind of lost amidst like so many decisions and stuff and sloth slips in. What I'm saying is figure out what you are committed to. so you can stop searching for certain things. Just give yourself a break from searching. Searching is exhausting. Psychologically, it wears you down. So get a piece of paper out and figure out, these are the things I'm 100% committed to. I don't have to allocate psychological energy to this. And then these are other things, still question marks. I'm still searching for clarity on this. So it might, let's take career. I'm committed to being a digital marketer. I'm committed to being, not me, but I'm saying, let's just take somebody. I'm committed to being a digital marketer. And for now, for the foreseeable future, I'm committed to growing this startup firm. I am committed to that. Well, guess what? Getting it on paper, guys, something magical happens when pen hits paper. Get it out of your brain and get it on the piece of paper and write that out. I am committed to this. Thank Almighty God. I don't have to keep searching for that. Okay. Boom. And it's on paper. And now try to flesh out. Okay. What does committed mean? Well, maybe I want to make X amount of money by the time I'm 35. Okay. Get it on paper. Get it on paper. And then your brain stops working on it. Okay. Your brain. This is what actually in my sixth part of the system called discernment. I talk about stress. What you're talking about really is stress. Stress is thinking about something when you don't want to. Okay, so it's not that you're opposed to thinking about where's my career going. It's that you don't want to necessarily have to think about that when you're dealing with bedtime, all right, mm-hmm. with the little kids. It's not that you're against thinking about what is my kid's educational curriculum going to be. Are they going to go to Catholic school? Are they going to homeschool? Are they going to go to public school? What are they going to do? It's not that you're against thinking about that. It's a legitimate question, but you don't want to think about it when you're in a business meeting, and you don't want to text your wife about it when you're in a business meeting. You don't want to do that. You know, so you have to learn how to get certain things out of your head and onto paper so that your brain will start turning it around. When it gets out of your brain onto paper, your brain has permission to let it go because it's safe. It's like saved, you know? It's like a saved document on your computer. You can walk away from it because you know it's on the cloud and it's safe, right? When it's on paper, so you need to learn how to take these, everyone does, but this is why Moleskine notebooks are so popular, by the way, because people find it so therapeutic to take a pen or a pencil and put it to paper. I think it's 10 times neurologically more effective than keyboard. I really do. I think that's been proven. So, for example, I have a master plan of a family master plan in my book underneath the part one vision. And if you got the book, it's like in that very first chapter. And by the way, all of these tools I have, it's on page 22. There you go. You know, that's an example of how I made a family master plan for families. The point of it is to get stressful things out of your brain and onto paper. And what I suggest that you do for your own personal life, separate and distinct from your family, is you can do the same thing. Make your own chart like this. Profession. What am I trying to do with my income? What am I trying to do with my customers? What am I trying to do with the skills that I'm trying to develop? What kind of partners do I want in life? These kinds of questions, make your own, you have to get creative and you have to work on your own life like you would work on a business. So carrying this crap around is where sloth kicks in because it wears you down. Learn how to put this stuff on paper. Your brain will get free and clear. That's the best answer I got.
Well, this is great. And hopefully it will change my life because,
I'm so stressed and tired.
That I'm stressed and tired. It's just, you understand this, Connor. It's like I have a 2 week old, right? I'm 3 months into like a new business. Patrick, very similar, right? You've got a 1 month old. How old is your kid?
2 8 months old and 2 month old. How many jobs?
Right. And you're a salesperson who you're trying to, you know, every week, right? You got to find more leads and you got to call more people. So like, we're both somewhat on this like treadmill of family is hard and work is hard, which I know is just your 20s. So I'm not complaining, but like there has to be a better way, you know? And a lot of these people out there, they're just like, oh, just say a rosary every day. It's like, well, what if during the whole rosary, all I'm thinking about is like all this other stuff. You know what I mean? It's like, now I've set 15 minutes aside to pretend to pray the rosary while I'm actually thinking about my email inbox. Work. It's my monthly
run rate.
This is another problem with like the Catholic influencer world is like prayer solves many problems, but it's not a complete solution to the human condition.
Aquinas said that grace builds on nature. And the Catholic Church kind of stinks at the nature part. I mean, not the church herself, but the people in it, right?
Yeah.
And so what we need to do is we really need to focus on building those natural skills. And then grace from Holy Mother Church can spill on you like a tsunami after that. Mm-hmm. So another thing, and this is going to sound gimp, but it's true. And it's this. When I am in that the gap, Dan Sullivan, who's the founder of something called Strategic Coach, it's an executive coaching thing that I'm involved with. He has a book called The Gap and the Gain. You should get it. The Gap and the Gain. The Gap and the Gain. And the gap is where you're just saying, man, I got a 2-week old and I got a brand new startup I'm working in and I don't have time to work out and the bills are piling up and there's a lot of uncertainty. That's the gap, meaning we are kind of looking at the future and saying there's so many uncertainties, and it's true. But the gain is when you can look in the past and see, look how far we've come. I got my woman. We got a baby. We got two babies. I'm an entrepreneur. Woo! I did not know I was going to be an entrepreneur. You start listing the things that are real accomplishments. And by staring at those, it motivates you. It gives you a sense of purpose. It gives you a sense, you have wins. So, now this is the gimp part I was going to say. A gratitude list. And they'll be like, oh, a gratitude list, so gay. But I'm telling you, there's something real here, right? And like taking, again, getting stuff out of the brain, like these cobwebs that pile up in our brains. What I would encourage you to do is go to a coffee shop and sit down somewhere, or adoration, that's wonderful, but take a big, huge blank piece of paper and try to write like 100 things that you're grateful for. Like, it's extensive, and we're living in the gap in the sense of like listing out all the problems. Boom, 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 boom. Well, let me ask you something right now. Like, and this is terrible. Like this is kind of a terrible Jedi mind trick to play on people. Mm-hmm. How much would those problems be for you if you found out your kid had cancer tomorrow? Like, done, like, boom. Like, we know, like, those little problems aren't going to be problems anymore, right? They're not going to be problems. People have real problems. We have little problems. And I carry around all these little tiny micro problems, and I pretend that the accumulation of them is a big problem. And then I see somebody who loses a child who I know, or I see somebody, my CFO recently got diagnosed with lung cancer, and he hasn't smoked in 15 years. They have to cut out one of his lungs. And he's okay. But I'm sitting there saying, I have no problems. I don't have any problems, right? So it sounds kind of cheesy, but it works, guys. Write down 100 things you're grateful for. And then you can actually imagine, like, here's what a real problem would be. And then you realize, no, you're in one of the greatest times of your life right now. You're young. You're charting your course. Yeah, there's uncertainties. But damn, if you're a rock climber and you don't have a chance of falling, it ain't fun. I mean, it's just, you got to have a little bit of danger for it to be a thrill. And you guys are in an amazing, thrilling part of your life right now. I mean, my life is much more set because of, I'm so much older.
Because of how old you are.
Yeah, right. I'm really old. I got the gray. look, guys, we haven't even said, I got two grandkids.
Oh, that's amazing.
Nice. There we go.
That'll mess with your head. That'll really mess with your head. And it's not that I'm a granddad. It's that I look at my wife who's still smoking hot. And I was like, She's a grandma. I'm getting in bed with a grandma. It's kind of strange, but so really these stressful times in life, look at how far you've come. Look at how many things there are to be grateful for. And then write down the clarity of the things you know you're committed to right now so that your brain can take a break from them. And you'll still have a list of things you got to make decisions on and clarity you need. But start working through them one by one. That's the best advice I got for you.
That's amazing. Patrick, we've got a few minutes left. Is there anything else that you would like to ask Connor before we wrap up the show?
No, I think you've given me a lot to think about. Ethan has kind of been my voice in this. I'm in the same boat. I'm just like, all right, how do I
speak for both of us.
I balance all of these things? I would love your personal advice on how to balance multiple endeavors at once. 16 kids, multiple companies. Yeah, sounds like a great time.
Gen Z boss in a mini. Sorry. Sorry, just the way you said it made it sound like 16 kids in a CEO.
In multiple companies.
16 kids in multiple It's dumb.
One thing that you guys can do is go to wellerfamily.com and I created this I guess it is a plug. I wasn't trying to plug, but like this is a little thing for your family. Go to wellerfamily.com and I created this thing called a family assessment test. And yeah, it's zeroed in on the family. So it's not necessarily like your career or anything, but it takes 5 minutes. Everyone loves an assessment test. It's fun, right?
Mm-hmm. Huge.
And so you take this little assessment test and it shows you like what part of the 6-part system you and your family are strong in and weak in. And it kind of scores you on each of those.
Nice.
And then we'll provide you information for free about here. You need to work on this first. So my point is again, it's like, part of the stress of having a young family is that you suck at stuff and you don't exactly know why or what you suck at. Like you just know that there's something off, right? It's like a recipe and you like ate the soup and you're like, that doesn't taste like it's supposed to.
That ain't it, yeah.
But you don't really know what ingredients off, right? So you can do that with this family assessment test is like, look at this and use it to kind of see where your weaknesses are. And then you can use some of my tools to start working on improving. We have to get out of this grayish area of this blob, which is really slow. It's like this blob of like, well, life is just hard and I'm tired and I don't know what to do. You know, it's that kind of malaise that is coming over our entire culture, waiting for somebody to come in and fix it for us. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing that like my family assessment test can help. You know, and then we'll follow up with people to see if do they want a free 30-minute consultation. You can talk to one of my coaches that will go through the test results with you and say, hey, you guys really stink at metrics. Like we need to work on a family scorecard just for you. How do we create that just for you? And so we have services that help people do that. But if a lot of your listeners are young, maybe they're just dating. And let me just finish with this story and then I'll leave you guys. I'm sorry I'm talking
so long. Good.
But my I had breakfast with my son on the morning of his wedding. This was, I don't know, less than a year ago. They just had their, maybe just like it was a honeymoon baby. So, and the baby's like 2 weeks old or maybe a month old. So
the Gallaghers are just like fertile people is what I'm
wondering. I guess, you know, but it's pretty awesome. So, but it was maybe 11 months ago or something like that. And I'm having breakfast with him. And I had just finished creating the family master plan that you were just looking at, that one page thing. And I was going through this with him. He's like, hey, how's that Welder family book that you're doing, Dad? And I'm like, son, why are we talking about business? This is like your wedding day. You're going to get married in like 4 hours, right? And we're at, you know, a breakfast shop. And I started showing this to him and he said, this is incredible. I'm actually going to take this on my honeymoon and kind of fill this out with my wife. And I'm like, there's better things to do on your honeymoon, but okay, you can do this also.
Different trip.
You know? Yeah. So my point is that for the young people out there, if you're dating somebody seriously, think about them like they're a business partner that you're considering going into business with, okay? Mm-hmm. It's so much more than that, I know, but again, grace builds on nature. And so if you filled this one page out with your significant other, okay, it will reveal very quickly, are you guys on the same page about some of these big questions in life? And we're going to make a pre-Cana version of this because pre-Cana can be kind of lame sometimes. And there's some really specific questions that we should be answering. You're about to go on a lifelong venture with somebody. Let's make sure you're answering certain basic questions. And my contention, guys, is if that young man and woman were thinking about starting a coffee shop together, they would ask way better questions sometimes than they do before getting married. And that's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. Absolutely true.
So fill out the family master plan, come to the website and do your assessment test and just do that with your significant other and just see how it goes. And so I think that will help a lot of people.
In closing, you guys are offering a really solid. When you guys sent the discount code over, I was like, "All right, now this is a promo.
This is real,
a lot of people are like, oh, here's 10% off our book. It's like, oh, gee, thanks for covering shipping, I guess. But you guys are offering 50% off this book if you use the code CRUNCH50.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
fantastic. Thank you so much for offering
You're welcome.
That to our audience.
I really you guys are doing great work out there. I love it. I'm gonna make sure my my kids are listening to you guys.
Oh, boy.
Perfect. Perfect.
That could come back to bite us.
I think numbers like 4 through, you know, 11, they'll like it more than, you know, yeah. 12 through 16 and then 1 through 3. But yeah.
You guys can go to wellorderedfamily.com. You can order the book, The Well-Ordered Family by Connor Gallagher. You can click the link in the description of this bio. Use the code CRUNCH50. Connor, thank you so much for spending some time with us this morning. It's been great.
Man, it's an honor. It was fun. Please have me back. You guys are great.
I'd love it. For your next book, we'll have you back on. The Architect.
There you go. Thanks.
All right. Thank you all for listening. Please pray for us. We'll be praying for you. We'll see you all next time.